Well, we are starting today for the next few weeks that I think is going to, I'm pretty excited about. And I think it's something that a lot of you are, of course, familiar with the story of Jonah. It's popular with like 3 and 4 year olds. So I figured we'd all do pretty good with this and could probably get some things out of it. But it's a great story. And obviously, I'm hopeful that we get a little bit more out of this odd story than just the fact that there's some weird, crazy, backwards kind of thing going on in this story. More than just the fact that a guy gets swallowed by a fish, that there's maybe something else. Because this is an odd story. It's a pretty backwards story. It's upside down in some ways. And so we're going to dive in with Jonah. No pun intended. Maybe a little. Okay, here we go. We're going to dive into Jonah. So if you have a Bible, open up to Jonah 1. Jonah 1, it's kind of, it's in the middle-ish. Okay, so Jonah 1, if you, on mine, it's on page 772. And so we're going to start there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read through the first chapter. I know that sounds kind of crazy. You don't actually go to church and somebody read the Bible that long. But we're going to do it. And I'm going to read through the first chapter, and then we'll come back and we'll make some comments and thoughts and so forth, so on. Okay? Y'all ready? Y'all ready? Okay. Yeah, cool. I was going to make sure, you know, we're there. And I'm excited. Jonah. All right. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. Now, real quick, I said I was going to make comments, but I'll do one real quick. Jonah is a prophet of God. And this is a big deal because prophets are different than priests. Priests are something that works at the temple, somebody who works at the temple, offers sacrifices, works with the people. But a prophet is like a different character. A prophet is somebody who has got something to say, first of all. He's usually the voice in Israel that's kind of kicking them in the teeth, telling them to get right with the Lord. And here's the thing. Israel has several priests, but most of the time, Israel only has one prophet, and he is the prophet. So he's kind of a big deal. All right, so here we go. Back to verse 3. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed to Tarshish, where he went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, "Help me, Oprah Winfrey! Help me, Dr. Phil!" Right? You weren't expecting that, right? All right. After they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. Really? Okay. The captain went ahead of him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us and we will not perish." Then the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots," or, you know, draw straws to find out who is responsible for this calamity. They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, "Tell us, who is responsible for making this trouble? What do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you?" This is like TSA at the airport, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, who are you? Where you come from? He answered, I think they got those questions from here. He answered, "I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land." This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, What should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us? "Pick me up and throw me into the sea," he replied, "and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you." Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried to the Lord, "O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, O Lord, have done as you pleased." Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. So, the story begins with the prophet of God disobeying God. He goes the wrong direction, right? He goes in a different direction. The story ends. This is where it begins. The story ends with the prophet of God saying, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea." He wants to die. What do we call it when someone wants to kill themselves? Right? Yes. So the story begins, go to Nineveh. He's like, nah, I'm going to go to another place. It starts with disobedience. It ends with, kill me, and if you don't kill me, I'll kill myself. Starts with, I don't want to go there. Ends with, just throw me in. I'd rather die than go there. It's kind of an odd beginning to a story. I want to talk to you about a little bit why we are even going to talk about Jonah, because Jonah's one of those stories that I hear people all say, I love the story of Jonah. And I go, why? I don't know. Is this good? Right? Like, it's a cool story. Yeah, okay. When we think of Jonah, we immediately think of what? Jonah and the what? And the whale. We think of the whale, and I totally get it. A huge fish swallows a man. He lives inside it for 3 days. Pretty big deal. We should probably notice that. That's a normal reaction. We think of a whale. But possibly, if you know the story of Jonah, if you're some sort of theologian, you know the Bible or whatever, you might think of the second thing that you think of might be what? It might be this city called Nineveh, this what's called the great city of Nineveh. That might be the second thing that you would think of. So why is this story going to be instrumental to us? Why is it going to be instrumental to where we are at this time? What is the significance of it versus it just being a cool story, right? Because I believe, and I think we will over the next it's just a few weeks. I think we're going to be able to identify with Jonah, first of all. I think there's going to be more about Jonah that we understand than we may see at first. And I also think we can identify with this great city of Nineveh, at least what it represents, because I believe there's a little Jonah in all of us. Well, not literally. There's not like a mini Jonah inside of you. That would be weird. Emily, my daughter, whenever she was a kid, she said something really profound. Maybe you thought of this before too. She said, "How does Jesus live in your heart? Is he really small?" It's a good question. So there's a little Jonah in all of us. I don't know if he's small or what, but he's in us. And what I mean by that is there's a character of Jonah in us, right? There's like this piece of his quality or his kind of the traits of what we see in Jonah. There's a little bit of that in all of us that we can identify. And so what I mean by that is there's a lot of good stuff in Jonah, but there's also a lot of crazy, whack, backward stuff in Jonah. And so Jonah in this great city is going to be an allegory for us. It's going to be a parable, so to speak, where there's Jonah who we can identify with, but then there is the great city, which represents, I think, not only the city we live in here, you know, the city that we're in, but also it represents people that you know. It represents types of people that we interact with or that we see or that we witness in some way. And so this is going to be the kind of thing that I think we can identify with as we, as people, try and become the types of people that I think Jesus would want us to be, as we try and become the Jesus followers that the world really needs, as we have conversations about what it means to live the gospel. We need to look at Jonah because I think we can catch a glimpse of ourselves. Now, there's a dream of our church, and like I said, to those of you guys that are new, we've been going for just a few months, but there's a dream, if you could throw that on the screen. And the dream is real simple. It's to bring life to our city by loving God and living the gospel. And so even in this language here, we have a dream for a city, but there's something inside of that that's personally transformative, but then, like, that happens within each of us, but then there's also this dream for our city. So this is why a little bit why we're going to explore, talk about, and run through this story. So let's go back to the story. Like I've said a few times, it's a bit of a weird story, a little bit of a backwards, upside down story. Let's look at verses 1-3. If you could throw that on the screen. And I'm not going to do this like verse by verse sort of thing, but I am going to point out a few things. You quickly learn some things just from these first few verses. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. It's hard to say that, by the way. Say that three times quickly. I want to show you what's, and some of you know this, but show this map here, and you know, hopefully you can see that well enough. But over on the east side, you see Nineveh, and then over on the west side, you see Tarshish. All right. So this is the known world at the time, as most of you probably know. But here's Nineveh. Jonah probably gets the word of the Lord sometime about going to Nineveh, somewhere near Joppa, which Nineveh would be northeast of him. Well, he decides to run west. And he doesn't just run west. He runs as far west as you could possibly get. He runs to Tarshish. But Tarshish isn't just another city. It's a very unique city. It's one of great wealth, one of great fame. It is a modern day, it's kind of a plush, like, vacation destination. It's like going to Hawaii. It's in southwest España, which is Espanol for Spain. Thank you very much. He's going to Hawaii. He's going to Lake Thunderbird, right? He's going to paradise, right? He's going to go to Fiji, whatever it is. And he's not just running the opposite direction. He's not just going to the beach, but he's going as far in the opposite direction as you could possibly get. He's going to Tarshish, right? Interesting. So Jonah says, nah, heading to the beach. But let's look at verse 3. Because we get to notice, pay attention to the details in verse 3. Here we go. So, Jonah ran away from the Lord, headed to Tarshish, as we said. He went down to Joppa. Is that helpful? Do we need to know that? Where he found a ship and bound for that port. After paying the fare, dude, he bought a ticket. Do we need to know that? I don't know. He went aboard, so he got on the boat. Thank you. And sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. So we get these odd, strange details that we could read by and not really think much of it. But the writer, the narrator, leaves something very significant out of this. He runs from the Lord, and then we get these weird details. He went to Joppa. He bought a boat ticket. He got on the boat. What is missing from this? Really, think about it, and you can say, what is missing? There's some massive piece of information that's missing from this. Why? Why does he run? This would be comparable to me standing up here and saying, today is my last day at Oklahoma City Community Church. I'm actually no longer going to be the pastor. And when I leave here, I'm going to get in my Ford Expedition. I'm going to drive down to Sonic, get me a pretzel dog with mustard and a Route 44 cherry limeade easy ice. Then I'm going to get on I-40 and head west. And you guys are going, easy ice? What? You're like, wait. Why are you leaving, right? You want to know why. You don't care that I went to Sonic and got a pretzel dog. Like, who cares? You ever had those? It's one of those things. Like, there's this big, massive piece of information missing that I think we sometimes just kind of assume we understand. But why does he run? And here's the thing. We can probably explore this in a lot of different ways, but why are you leaving? We get a short comment about Nineveh that it says that it has some wickedness in it. But doesn't every city have wickedness in it? Like, this is nothing new. And Jonah is a prophet. This is what he does, okay? He does this all the time. It's not like God is calling him to do something he's not used to doing. It's not like he was a fisherman and God called him to drop his nets and follow him. That would be like crazy. That doesn't happen. No, it's like it's this different scenario where Jonah is the prophet of God. He's the prophet, and he's asked to do something that isn't too crazy for him. So why does he run? Why is this so dramatic that he's going to get on a ship and say, throw me into the sea before I go there? You ever wondered that question? What is the deal? We can get a little more insight into Nineveh from another book in the Bible, Nahum, in which Nahum has an entire chapter dedicated to Nineveh. Chapter 3, if you want to look it up sometime, but I'll kind of talk about it a little bit. Nineveh is the capital of Assyria. The Assyrian nation is basically the bad guys, if you will, to Israel. They had basically eradicated tons of Israelites over the years. I mean, obliterated them, killing them, all this sort of stuff. So it's a pretty, to say the least, violent place. The Assyrians are considered violent, and Nineveh is the capital city. And this is what Nahum says about Nineveh. Let's give you some of the lines in this chapter. He says, "Woe to Nineveh, woe to the city of blood." So this is the title he gave it. "Full of lies, full of plunder, never without victims, piles of dead." Get this picture right here. "Bodies without number, people stumbling over corpses." This is in the Bible. Sounds like it's from, you know, Night of the Living Dead, right? And then he says this, but so bodies lying in the street, and then he predicts the fall of Nineveh. "Your injury is fatal. Everyone who hears the news about it claps their hands at your fall. For who has not felt your endless cruelty?" So Nineveh is not only cruel, it says endless cruelty. Whenever people hear about you falling and you being crushed, they're going to stand up and clap. So it's an ancient version of Al-Qaeda or of Nazi Germany, right? People are going to celebrate their demise. All right, so this is Nineveh, and this is the way that the experience that Jonah has about it. So you can kind of start to understand why Jonah runs and doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to go to Nineveh. The story that plays out is pretty fascinating. And not to belabor it, but if you kind of think about this violent storm, right? It comes up. This violent storm, sailors are outmatched by the storm. They don't know what to do. They're doing everything they can. They're throwing their cargo off the ship. They're calling out to their gods, little g, right? What is Jonah doing? He's sleeping. I say this story is backwards and odd because everything gets turned around than the way it ought to be in this first chapter. If you're a Jewish person, again, whenever we talk about the word, especially when it's Old Testament and when it's like a story like this, you got to think about it when it was told, right? It was told and it was probably narrated by somebody, and you're a Jewish person or you're an Israelite listening to the story and you're hearing it. Maybe you're reading it, but more likely you're hearing it. And who is the good guy in the story? In your mind, there's the prophet of God who is the good guy. Yet he's the one running from God. He's the one sleeping. He's the one that is saying, "Throw me into the sea." And who are the bad guys? Well, I don't know if you'd necessarily say that the sailors are the bad guys, but they're definitely the guys that are calling out to who? They're little g's, right? Now, you know what I mean. Little g God, right? And so they're calling out to their gods, and they're the ones that are supposed to be bad, and yet they're acting good. So this is a little backwards, upside down type of story, because if you're listening to it, you're going, this is not like the way it's supposed to be. He's the prophet. And to this point, you got the good guy who isn't acting good. He's acting bad. You got the bad guys who should be bad guys. They're acting good. Verse 14 says, "The sailors cried out to the Lord," capital L, right? So things are changing. They're not crying out to their tribal gods or Greek gods. They're crying out to the God of all creation. Verse 15 says that after they throw Jonah into the water, you know, splash. It says that they greatly feared the Lord and offered sacrifices to him and made vows to him. That's kind of a significant shift in just one storm, but okay. So the sailors respond to the Lord, and where is Jonah, the prophet of God? He is in the water thinking he's going to die. It's interesting that Jonah runs from the Lord, but where is God all the time? He's right there. He's running from him, and God's there. He's in the storm. He's with these sailors. Jonah says he'd rather die than go to where God has called him to go. So like I said, we all have a little bit of Jonah in us. I believe we do. So the point of this message, and at this point, it would seem like it would be very natural for me to ask you a question. You guys ready for the question? What are you running from? Right? That would be the natural question that most messages would get to this point and say, what has God told you and spoken to you in your life in which you've now run from? And you know what? It may be applicable to some of us, but I think that if you really like try to get into this message a little bit more, there's something deeper about the Jonah that's in us and the application of what's happening that's a little deeper and more about a heart issue than it is about necessarily running, even though you may be running and maybe that's what's going on. But I think we're going to look a little different because, you see, Jonah apparently hated Nineveh, right? He hated them. He did not have any compassion for Nineveh. He was told to go preach against it, and he ran. And I don't think it was because he was afraid of the city of blood. He wasn't afraid. He's a prophet of God. He's not afraid for his safety. It says later, which we'll talk about in a couple weeks, but it says later in chapter 4 of this book, it says that he was afraid that God would have compassion on them. He hated them so bad that he did not want God to have compassion on Nineveh, and he knew that God would. So he's like, no, I'm not participating in your love fest on Nineveh, right? So he runs. Jonah's heart towards Nineveh is unforgiving. He has zero compassion. His heart has become hardened. Jonah doesn't want to go to Nineveh because he doesn't want God to do what God does. You know what I believe about me and about us? We often have heart issues, if you will. Heart issues towards someone or someones or some type of person in which our hearts have become hardened or our compassion has waned or our love has evaporated and grace is not in our heart towards them. And this is very true. And so instead of us asking the question, what are you running from? I want you to think about this story from two different ways today. The first way is this. Do you have a heart issue? And it's going to be, these questions will be on the screen. Do you have a heart issue towards a person? Do you have an unforgiveness, a grudge? And you're going, really, this is what we're talking about today? Yeah. Do you have a form of hatred, some level of a hardened heart towards a person? You know what I mean? It's like the person that has hurt you, or maybe it's the person that has hurt someone you love, or it's someone that has spoken badly of you, or someone that just made you angry because you can't stand their actions that they seem to get away with. And they don't deserve your forgiveness or your grace because of what they've done. And I bet if I went around and asked each of you, if there was somebody in your life, you might say, I can't think of any right now, but if there has been someone, I mean, I can tell you stories in my life. I had recently just somebody that would make me angry, right? That I really was so full of just tiredness of what I witnessed, the selfishness that seems to get away with things they ought not get away with. And I remember feeling a sense of, I wish their world would collapse and the truth would become known. That's a heart issue on me. Jonah has a heart issue in this story, I believe. I believe we all have heart issues when it comes to people. And so maybe this person, right, like so is a parent or a former boss or a current boss or maybe it's a family member or a former friend, someone you work with, someone you go to school with. I wonder if we hold this in our heart, if we're essentially running to Tarshish, right? I wonder if the grudge or unforgiveness that exists within us is the backwards, upside down type of thing that we see happening right here in this story, that the good guys who love Jesus end up becoming the disobedient prophet of God. And I don't know, but I think for some of us, we're there. And the second way I want you to look at this. So this first way is, do you have an unforgiveness in your heart? The second way is similar, but I want you to look at this in the sense of, what type of person is your Nineveh? And when I say that, Jonah didn't know the Ninevites, right? He wasn't like personally related to them. They were a type of person that represented something in his heart. What type of people in this city or in this world or in your life represent Nineveh? And you're like, what do you mean? Well, do you have, and here's the second question on the screen, do you have heart issues towards certain types of people? And what I mean that is you have certain categories. Maybe it's a certain, and you're thinking, I don't know if this is real, but it's a certain race of people that you have heart issues towards. Is it a certain type of person that lives a certain type of lifestyle that you would consider maybe a sinful lifestyle. Therefore, you've judged them and you've categorized them and you have very little compassion for them. Instead, you have, you know, some sort of maybe disgust with them. And even if it is a sinful lifestyle, there are types of people we take, you know, I mean, there are all sorts of types of people. It's the people that have a different political view than you, or people that are from various places of, you know, in various cultures that you don't jive with, you know what I mean? You're not really into that, what they are. And so they kind of, you keep a distance at them, from them. These are the people that you don't go to, that you avoid. These are the types of people that you say, it would be really hard for me to have compassion on them. I hear a lot of people say, you know, they have no compassion, you know, with people that seem to take advantage of the system. They don't work hard enough. You know what I mean? Like, they seem to take too many hands out. And so we have these different types of people where I've had conversations where these types of people become sources of anger and frustration, and a form of superiority starts to well up in us. You know, in 2004, after Katrina, you guys remember this, right? I heard Christians say, well, God probably did that because of the wickedness in the city. Did you guys ever hear a comment like that? What? The same should be said then of our city, right? If that's our thinking. Obviously, we don't want to think that. So again, I read this story and I think, why did he run? So Jonah, the prophet of God, he has something in his heart that needs to get right. And it hadn't been something front and center. And it didn't become exposed until he was called to overcome it. So like I said, I could ask you to quit running. I could say, what is God asking you to do, and what have you ran from? But instead, I want you to think about it in these two ways. Who? Is there a person that you need to forgive? Is there a person that you need to extend compassion to that you normally wouldn't, or that you have some grudge against because they deserve it? Who is that person in your life? Is there a person like that in your life? And you're saying, and you know, every time I do a message, I feel like everyone should end with this serious, huge call, right? To live the gospel. But today I was thinking, you know what? There's a story that's happening right here that is actually about the gospel. Because forgiveness is at the core of the gospel. Jesus hanging on a cross, what does he say to the Father? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And then I'm thinking about my life, and I think about all the things that are not exposed. It's like Jonah. It was not exposed. It was not front and center of his life. He was the prophet of God. He'd been doing stuff. But not until he was called to overcome something did it ever get exposed. And I wonder how many of us have these hidden unforgiveness, or these grudges in our life. Maybe they're not even hidden, but there's this people we just hold anger towards. And I'm saying, hey, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, it's not about them and it's about you. Maybe that whole thing, who cares? They may deserve it. Nineveh deserved it, right? Their actions were very much, we could justify hating them, right? We could justify it. But there's this story that's unraveling in this story, which I think is at the core of the gospel, which is about forgiveness. Is there a type of person that you need to soften your hearts towards? And I say this really passionately. It seems so passive to say a type of person, but I think some of us, we sit here and we have types of people that we avoid and we say, no thanks, and I don't like them. I don't want to be around them, and they exist and they're out there, and we need to have a heart of compassion. Because what did Jesus, when the Gospels, whenever Jesus saw a group of people, what was the typical written word about what Jesus saw? He looked at them with compassion. He saw them as harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Do we think that imagery is incredible? A sheep without a shepherd is someone who is lost, helpless. And
we look at people who don't know God with no compassion. We look at people who are far from God and full of sin, or maybe they just have a, like I say, a culture that we don't jive with, and we go, eh. And they are just harassed, helpless sheep without a shepherd. Kind of changes the lens of what we should look at people with. He looked at them with compassion. So Jonah in the great city is this backwards, upside down type of story, one where the bad people become good and the good struggle through the bad. And today I'm hopeful that you get the backwards, upside down things in your life right side up and headed forward. If you have a person that you need to forgive, you have the freedom to do that today, and all you have to do is choose to pray and choose. But here's what I would say, bold beyond that, is say, maybe you don't just say, I choose to forgive them, but you do the journey of reconciliation, right? Maybe they don't even know you have a grudge, but so maybe it's a letter that you write, or maybe it's an email that you write, or maybe it's a phone call that you make, or maybe it's as simple enough as a text, and some of you, it's as major enough that you need to go to them, though. And it doesn't need to be about the issue, whatever that issue is. It needs to be about Jesus. And it needs to be about forgiveness and grace. And that's where it needs to end. Jonah ran in the opposite direction because he held unforgiveness in his heart. And like I said, justifiably so. So your feelings, hear this. Your feelings may be justified, but God calls us out of our normalcy and our petty, grudge-filled ways into unthinkable grace, unfathomable mercy, because it's been extended to us, and therefore we must extend it to others. So whatever person or type of person that God has rattled in your heart today, I'm praying that God has rattled your heart, I suggest you do something about it. If next week I get some calls, some of you are going to Hawaii or Lake Thunderbird, I'll know what happened. Hee hee. I want you to bow your heads with me, all right? So as I said, these two questions, and you can just continue to listen and let your heart speak to you. And I think this is one of those things, messages that I know it took a long time to get to a really pointed thought. We were engrossed in the story of Jonah. It's fascinating. We haven't even got to the fish yet. And all it gets crazier. And then all of a sudden we turn on a dime and we're talking about forgiveness and grace and grudges and things that are in our hearts that are at the core of the story. And we get to remove ourselves from the story of Jonah, and we're back to the story of our life, aren't we? And I am hopeful today that it takes root and that you hear something that is very gospel-oriented, that you can live the gospel by extending grace and unending mercies to the people that don't deserve it. Because this upside down backwards story is about, for us, hearing that we live upside down backwards lives. We accept grace and mercy, yet we often don't extend it. Let's get it right side up. So, is there a person? And I'm going to ask you, and I do these sort of things every once in a while just because I like to see how the Spirit is moving in us. But is there a person for you today that, yeah, I think God rattled my heart that I need to figure out what it means to extend compassion and mercy to a specific person? I'm not talking about the types of people. I'm talking about a specific person. If you would say, yeah, God, right on my heart with a specific person today, would you be bold enough to just quickly lift your hand where you're seated? That's good. As I said, the work of reconciliation may begin today. And it starts and ends with the fact that you just want to extend grace. It's not about the issues anymore. It doesn't have to be. That's where freedom lives. And then the second question, and maybe this is a little bit too vague, but did God rattle your heart in a sense that, yeah, I kind of could identify with the types of people that I don't extend compassion towards, and maybe I judge before I actually give them compassion? Did God rattle your heart about that today? If that's you, would you lift your hand and say, yeah, I resonated with that? Well, God, we pray that as we take a few moments to respond to you, that God, whatever you've done in our heart today is real and it's not something we take lightly, but that God, we take your word and we let it pierce into our heart, and that, Lord, you would take us from this place with a thought, an idea, and a prayer to go and live differently as a result. And so, God, we pray for the people that you've put on our hearts, that God, you would help us navigate the difficult water, so to speak, of doing the hard work of forgiveness and reconciliation. So, Father, I pray that over our church today, that God, we don't see this as an idea or a subject matter of forgiveness, but that we see it as a core piece of your story and how it fits into ours. And so, God, we just thank you for your word, and we pray now that you would lead us forward.